welcome one and all to Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by EE Journal. I'm your host, Amelia Dalton, and this week, ladies and gentlemen, we're letting loose some LUTs, bringing in the bitstream, and cramming in some configuration. Yep, we're getting into some serious field programmable gate array business this week. We're talking to Mick Posner from Synopsys about the many uses of FPGA prototyping, the growing importance of embedded software in SoC design, and the evolution of prototyping strategies. Check it out. Hi, Mick. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Hi, Amelia. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for asking. All right, let's talk about FPGA-based prototyping. So, do you think there is a connection between the growing importance of embedded software and the use of FPGA-based prototyping specifically for SoC design?
Oh, absolutely. Using the survey data from our FPGA-based prototyping methodology manual download, we already see that an estimated 70% of all SoCs are FPGA-based prototyped. What we've seen, though, is a growing change where there's a critical project milestone for many companies that their SoC must be prototyped before they actually tape out. So we're already seeing this embedded software, which needs to really be run in its entirety, running on an FPGA-based prototype is becoming really critical.
Okay, so beyond debugging embedded software, what else can we use prototyping for?
There are multiple use cases. So these do include the early software development, but also hardware and software integration, system validation. And we're seeing more and more use for kind of what we call long verification scenarios and regression testing. If you look at hardware-software integration, driver development along with verifying the RTL, this is an existing use case. This can either be at the block, IP level, subsystem, or final SoC. The goal here is where really the RTL and the software come together. You really need to immerse the RTL in its final software environment to make sure that both the software and the hardware work together. Another main use case is system validation. So this is where you immerse the final system in its real-world I/O. And here you could be doing interoperability testing, so where you're physically plugging your prototype Ethernet into a standard hub. Or compliance testing, so you're testing one of the newer protocols like USB 3.1. You would need to actually go through compliance, and you can do a lot of that within an FPGA-based prototype. So this is where you're using real user input to kind of validate the design. One such example came up recently at one of our SNUG presentations, the Synopsys User Group. HDMI protocol itself requires very long samples of data, huge frames, and there's a certain protocol test that's fundamentally run over 2 seconds. It's impossible to really simulate 2 seconds in a standard simulator. You know, it still takes a long time in emulation, but with FPGA-based prototyping, and specifically our HAPS platform with what we call a deep trace debug, you can run this real-life scenario, you can capture that full 2 seconds of data, and you can validate that part of the protocol. So this is how prototyping is extending into these verification scenarios where you can utilize the real speed of the prototype to exercise your design with massive amounts of data. We even create reference designs so customers can very quickly plug in their blocks, their SoC, into our environment and get up and running in this verification scenario. And finally, the regression environment. Typically, you end up with thousands upon thousands of lines of software and potentially changing RTL throughout your design process. FPGA-based prototyping is a real rapid way to set up a regression environment. You know, with a full farm environment, our new HAPS 80 with ProtoCompiler supports the prototype hardware within a farm environment. So globally accessible, and then the software can be regressed against these hardware images very fast because of the execution speed that you then run those overnight versus taking many days through a normal simulation farm.
So Synopsys just introduced what it's calling the first integrated prototyping solution. So what exactly do you mean by integrated?
Integration, obviously, is a widely used term, but in the case of our solution, really integrated means co-developed. So the capabilities that we introduced as part of HAPS 80 with ProtoCompiler These capabilities were specced at the high level and then implemented during the development process in both the tool flow and the hardware. So there's specific capabilities that require this very close integration. Such examples are our high-speed time domain multiplexing, our universal multi-resource bus, and debug. These are all capabilities that require co-development of both the tool flow and the supporting hardware. Kind of a deep dive would be our new built-in HAPS Deep Trace debug. This is our fourth generation. Previously, the debug to capture large amounts of visibility data was an add-on. This has implications to the flow, and of course, the total cost of ownership is higher because you have add-on. With the HAPSADIAN proto compiler, this capability is natively built in. That means in the tool flow, it's almost seamless to the user. We automatically insert the logic that is required to do this deep trace visibility, and that automatically inserted into the design then is utilizing the physical hardware that's built into the HAPS-AT itself. So integration is the integration between our tool flow and the hardware. And there's really no better way of doing FPGA-based prototyping, and this is really changing the way that users are exercising their prototypes. No longer do they have to have long, intensive, manual effort to bring up a prototype. By having an environment that has been built together, it really takes out the real need for expertise to deploy a capability, the example being the debug. It's fundamentally a checkbox within the software now, enable debug, and it's automatically inserted into their design and automatically deployed in the hardware.
So, Mick, how do you think the introduction of commercial integrated prototyping solutions is going to change the prototyping market in terms of prototyping adoption and the types of prototyping solutions being used going forward?
I think at the high level, it's raising the bar of what will be expected of FPGA-based prototyping with the focus on productivity. The integrated solution also changes what's possible. Previously, you would see only small blocks of the design, maybe the interfaces, being prototyped. But now with HAPSADIAN proto compiler, we're enabling far greater parts of the design, sometimes the full SoC, including CPU and GPU designs of over 400 million ASIC gates, to be prototyped. So now a wider range of design and verification capabilities can be applied within that high-performance FPGA-based prototype. We're just enabling more of the design. We've taken away any of the restrictions that were traditionally seen as FPGA-based prototyping.
All right, so let's talk about prototyping strategies. How do you see prototyping strategies evolving over time?
Sadly, they're probably not evolving as fast as we would like. While we've made huge leapfrog events with our HAPS and protocompiler technology, customers are still lagging along a bit. And my advice to them is always start early and build expertise. While the tools can do a lot more than they have ever been able to do, there is still a level of expertise needed within the users. If you treat prototyping as a last minute, we will fundamentally fail. And it goes the same for expertise. The advice is start early, build expertise. And when I say start early, that just means make prototyping part of your overall project plan. Again, we're still seeing last minute prototyping activities where the users suddenly realize, oh, wait a sec, I need to validate my software on the hardware. I've got to build a prototype, and it's the last minute thing. It's that critical milestone, as we said earlier on, to actually get the pass for tape out. If they'd started earlier in the process, pipe clean the flow, get the initial blocks up and running on the HAPS systems, then they would be ready in time for these milestones. And expertise is not so much having to have in-depth information and knowledge of FPGAs. The protocompiler solution actually abstracts the user, but there's still a level of expertise of actually utilizing all of the capabilities of the platform. and making sure that they understand any implication to deploying additional debug visibility that these platforms provide.
All right, Mick, it's time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, I heard that you teach teenagers how to drive, and more specifically, you teach them emergency avoidance training. Now, how the heck did you get involved with that?
So I've actually raced cars for many, many years. I have a highly modified Subaru that I built, 550 wheel horsepower in a yellow wagon Subaru, and a little Mazda Miata with 100 horsepower. I felt that those skills that you learn on the track can also be applied to the road for safety. And then I ran across what's known as Teen Street Survival. It's a nationally sponsored event where we take teens in their own cars into a safe driving experience where we simulate emergency situations. You're driving down the street and a box falls off the back of a truck. What do you do in an emergency situation? You've got to avoid that box and you've got to keep the car under control so you don't swerve off into oncoming traffic. So we simulate those events for teens, and I love to say that once you've taught a teen how to control a vehicle once, it gets stuck in their brain. They'll be able to remember that for the road. So this is just teaching them the things that they'll need to know potentially on the street. Because what we usually see is, sadly, if this happens for the first time on the road, it can have obviously disastrous situations because they just don't know how to react. They've never felt ABS go on. They've never felt a vehicle slide. And they panic. Actually, you know, even adults panic. But once you've experienced that once, you know that, unlike the films, your car is not going to explode, burst into flames and flip over. Most street vehicles can go around corners at way higher speeds than you would really think. So I use my experience as a long-time racer just to give the experience to the kids and hopefully keep them safe on the streets.
That is super cool, Mick. Well, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you very much for the interview.
All right, speaking of FPGAs, have you been wanting to get your FPGA feet wet, but sticker shock kept you from taking the plunge? Well, folks, what if I told you there was an FPGA development kit out there under $100? Yes, let me introduce you to Arty, the $99 FPGA development kit from Xilinx. Intrigued? Then I would strongly encourage you to click the link below the player on eejournal.com or head on over to YouTube, keyword eejournal, and check out a most recent episode of Chalk Talk entitled Meet Arty, the $99 FPGA development kit from Xilinx. In this episode of Chalk Talk, I sit down with Darren Zacher and Jim Burnham of Xilinx and discuss the what, the where, and the how of Arty, a new, easy-to-use, 99-buck FPGA-based embedded development kit from Xilinx. Again, you can check out this episode by heading on over to YouTube and typing in EE Journal. You can also click that handy-dandy link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com, or you can head on over to the on-demand section of EE Journal. You can thank me later. And now it's time for a little news you may have missed. WTF, they still make those things? Edition? First, let me take you back to 19 or so, and there I am, sitting on the couch with my older sister. The folks are out on the town for the evening. I think it was a bowling banquet or something like that, and we decide to settle in with some popcorn and watch a movie. We pop in a cassette, Penn and Teller's Invisible Thread. Yes, I was a very progressive elementary schooler. And we get about 2 minutes in when the smell hits us. It's kind of like the smell when we strapped on some fireworks to a couple of my Barbies and threw them down the stairs. But that's an entirely different story. Anyway, then it was about a minute later when there was smoke. Yes, smoke is billowing out of the Betamax player. And then the screen fizzles for a second and then bam, it goes black. My teenage sister bolts from the couch and very smartly unplugs the surge protector from the wall. And then we sit there for a second in silence. No idea about what to do next. And folks, that was my very last experience with the Betamax. And apparently it shouldn't have been, because Sony just announced, yes, some 20-odd years after said smoky, smelly Betamax incident, that they have decided to stop making Betamax tapes in March of next year, actually. But, what? Really? Now, people, apparently Sony stopped making the Betamax recorders back in 2002. I completely missed that news. But it kept making tapes for the, diehard fans, as they put it. Now, I want to hear from you, my loyal fish-frying audience. Who are these diehard fans, and what the heck are they doing using a Betamax in, say, this century? Am I missing something? Please, if I am, let me know in the box below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on EE Journal, or heck, even send me an email, amelia@eejournal.com. If I'm off base here, please tell me, because frankly, my friends, I'm baffled. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And hey, if Google Plus is your thing, you can also join our circle on Google Plus. We also have that YouTube channel I mentioned earlier, keyword EE Journal, chock full of all kinds of techie videos, our very own popular Chalk Talk webcast series, and our video series called On the Scene. And you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, you can also grab our Fish Frying RSS feed or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Frying page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or perhaps the best geeky hotspot in your city, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of November 20th, 2015, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.